irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to Question Reality with Priscilla Leona, right here on LA Talk Radio.
Hello! Welcome to the Question Reality Radio Show. I'm Priscilla Leona, producer and host of this show, and we are coming to you live from Los Angeles, California. Now, for 14 years, we have been providing our audience with entertainment industry career advice. And this show is definitely for you if you are questioning your career reality about pursuing a career in show business, or if you're already working in the entertainment industry and you just need some tips, advice, or resource information on how to elevate your career status. Guests on our show include Emmy winners, Grammy Award winners, Tony Award winners. We've had reality TV stars and just a wide variety of working show business professionals who work as film, television, music, radios, producers and directors. We have casting directors, literary agents, casting agents, PR agents, talent managers, screenwriters, publicists, actors, comedians, singers, let's see, novelists, script supervisors. Some of my favorites are those stuntmen. Woo, love me a stuntman. Oh, we're going to have a stunt woman. Very excited. I've never had a stunt woman. Actually, I did. My God, my mind, it comes and goes these days. I have had stunt women, but this is a very, very exciting stunt woman. And I'll tell you more about that as we get closer to when she's going to come on. We have celebrity makeup artists, entertainment lawyers, just the list goes on and on. So if you missed any of our shows, here are the three ways that you can listen to any of them. Number one, the free mobile app, which is obviously from the App Store or the Google Play Store. We're also on iHeartRadio, iTunes, Amazon Podcasts, Google, Audible.com, Stitcher.com. We're all over the place. We are there. We are there for your listening pleasure. My voice has not been called the listening pleasure that everyone likes, but I like it. I think it's a friendly voice. So just be quiet and listen to me. The last way is the archive page. So you can listen directly from the website that you're listening to us on right now, latalkradio.com. Just look for our show title, Question Reality, or look for my name, Priscilla Leona, under the host tab. And lastly, we ask a little favor, a little friendly favor. We ask that you please, please, please subscribe to our podcast via Apple Podcasts, and also to please give us a little like and a follow on all of our social media pages. We're on all the social media platforms, Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, LinkedIn, YouTube. Recently, I have started a TikTok. I have become obsessed with TikTok. I don't know what is wrong with me, but I'm telling you that TikTok is addictive. My husband's like, oh no, you don't want to be on TikTok. And then he has to go through all these conspiracy theories. But you know what? I love TikTok and I'm going to be on there. I just think it's absolutely wonderful how you can have immediate access to some of your favorite celebrities, and they're just really digging TikTok too, because they're in their homes and they're doing dancing and singing and talking. And never before, when I was a little tiny kid, I was obsessed with Donny Osmond. Never I think I get to watch him on TikTok in his home just talking. I'm like, woo, Donny Osmond. Most of you don't know who the hell Donny Osmond is, but you know what? He used to be everything when I was a little tiny girl. But anyway, TikTok, yes, we're on TikTok too. Finally, If you want to be booked on our show to promote and showcase your talents, current and upcoming projects or products, you want to sell some of your products, or you just want to help listeners by providing so much appreciated entertainment industry career advice. Now, here's where you got to focus. You know how we all have like 5 second attention span. So now I need your 5 seconds. You have to go to our official website, which is questionrealityradioshow.com. Questionrealityradioshow.com. Not the website that you're listening to us on now, which is obviously latalkradio.com. This is the website where we air the show. So again, go to questionrealityradioshow.com, and that's where you can see the annual guest schedule, and you might want to go there and take a peek at who the upcoming guests are and check out their sites. If there's a particular career that you're interested in, it's perfect to go to, because you might want to be a script supervisor, and then I have, you know, the name of the person and then the script supervisor, and that way you can know in advance exactly what show you want to tune into. So questionrealityradioshow.com. Also, you can submit. That's where you go to submit to be booked on our show. So you just click the contact link. It's really, really, really easy and short. We just need your name, email, title, and website. So again, questionrealityradioshow.com. Now, for the most exciting part of the show, when the guest comes on. Now, let me tell you who we have today. We have this, I think she's one of the most beautiful women to gaze upon. Like, if I were a man, I would totally hit on her. I'd be like, Linda Palmer, I have money. I have a trust fund. Let's make it happen, girl. Let's go to Amsterdam and walk up and down and smoke doobies all day. Not that I ever did that, you know, but that might entice somebody. I don't know. I'd have to like see what she's into. But she's a beautiful, beautiful woman. I always think she's Viking from my ancestry, because she's got this beautiful blonde hair and this, you know, pearl skin, and she's just so beautiful to me. Anyway, her name's Linda Palmer. She's a writer, a director, a producer, and a production designer. She is the founder and CEO of Runaway Productions, and I want you to go to all of her sites, please, and give her a little like, follow, you know, a little thumb. We all need a little thumb these days. But the website that I want you to go to is runawayproductions.tv. Now, do you know she is the only person that I know that has that .tv extension? They came out about 10 years ago, and I thought, I think I should snag that. I was seriously thinking about getting that .tv, but you know, you really have to be actively doing things that would coincide with having a .tv. And I'm like, yeah, I'm not going to do it. But anyway, it's runawayproductions.tv. And she's also on IMDb under Linda Palmer. She is, she's so lovely. She has worked with some of the most talented people in the business. I love having her on. She's always, always, always she is a well full of information. Like, there's nothing this woman doesn't know. So that's why I try to bring her on as much as possible. So without further ado, let's just get her on and get her going. Welcome to the show, Linda Palmer.
Thank you for having me, Priscilla. It's lovely to be back.
God, Linda has been on my show for so many times over the years. She's always a fan favorite. She just really gives such great information, and she always has the coolest projects, and I just love having you on the show. Now, very exciting. You are in your car right now doing this interview, because you are on your way to, I believe you just won an audience award for best documentary short at the Silicon Beach Film Festival last week for What We Share. Linda and I share this. We are obsessed with Halloween. So her documentary is Halloween Obsessed Haunted Attraction. So exciting for for people who love Halloween stuff. So, but all of your projects, they win awards. There's nothing that I've ever known you to do that you haven't won an award. You're just a little award winner, aren't you, Linda Palmer?
Well, we have won a few awards.
Yes, you've won awards.
There's no shortage.
Your shelf is just, it's tilted. All the awards are falling off the edge because it's tilted now. So tell us all about Halloween Obsessed Haunted Attractions. Now, I have to tell the audience, first of all, that I already saw it, and it sincerely has every component that you want and expect in a documentary. So that's my opinion. So first of all, please tell us, this is like a multiple question. I'm going to test your memory. Multiple questions. I had so many questions. I said, I'm going to ask her all at once and see which ones stick. So first of all, please tell us what the documentary is about, why you decided to do this documentary, and very importantly to our audience, what makes a great multiple award-winning documentary?
So I think what I'll do is I'll tackle the why we did this first.
Okay.
So what happened was obviously COVID a couple years ago. And, you know, we had been doing a lot of narrative and short films prior to that, but we really didn't know what the future was going to be like after the pandemic. And so we started thinking about other things that we would want to do if we weren't, you know, if it was radically affecting the industry. So, and what I mean by that is there were a lot of things that were going to change in the industry, a lot of things specifically to protect people on set, which needs to happen. And like having the health people there and, you know, just being super safe and having all of these just criteria met through the various unions. So when we started seeing that, we just didn't know as an independent company, because that's what we are, we're an indie company, how that would affect us being able to do movies. And largely that's because a lot of our stuff is definitely under $1 million. Some of it's under a couple hundred thousand dollars, but regardless, it's a whole bunch of money. And if you lose even a day of filming, it radically affects you, and it could actually shut you down. You could essentially not be able to finish a film, which would really cost you that whole budget. And so it, you know, it became something that was really concerning to us. So we just started looking at different things. I mean, obviously we love film. Documentaries have started to become more popular. We've been enjoying them ourselves, you know, because we were looking for things to watch, and we found ourselves just really being drawn to a lot of documentaries. And so we thought, you know, we're going to try and give that a go. And so my husband and I invested in some film equipment, and we started learning to shoot. We started learning to edit. We started learning to light, to do sound. And those are all things that we used to hire people for. So, you know, we decided, okay, for our first documentary, because we're learning all this stuff, we want to start with something that will at least keep us going, right? Like, we won't want to give up. And as you know, Priscilla, Halloween is like one of our favorite things. We got married on Halloween. We have Halloween parties every year.
Wow.
Created Halloween content. So basically what we decided to do was we were going to do a documentary about Halloween. And we started thinking about it, and there's just too many things to cover in one documentary. And so we were like, okay, well, maybe we could make a series, like a docu-series. And each episode could be about a different part of Halloween that people love. And so that's really what sort of materialize that concept. And so our first episode is, our pilot is The Misconception of Witches. So it's Halloween Obsessed, The Misconception of Witches. That is already out on Amazon and Tubi and a couple other streaming services. But honestly, you can watch it for free on Tubi, or you can pay for it on Amazon and not have any commercials. But we've been getting a ton of great responses from it. It was in a one of our favorite film festivals, Idlewild, and it won an Indie Spirit Award. Speaking of awards that we're winning, it was also nominated for Best Documentary, a featurette, and then also Best Documentary Director. So that was really nice to be acknowledged for something that we had just started, and to know that people were really interested in the content. And so our second episode is the haunted attractions. And really, so every episode is a little different. The one thing they have in common is they're about something that has to do with Halloween. But the haunted attractions episode, and you can attest to this, Priscilla, is not like any other documentary you've seen, in the sense that it is almost action-packed. Like, it goes by so fast, you're like, what did I just watch? And it's just, yeah, and it's like, just so visual and fast, and there's a lot going on. But what it does is it deals with four different haunters, types of haunters, a yard haunter, a home haunter, actually two home haunters, one of them on the verge of becoming a professional haunt, and then one of the largest professional haunts in the United States called Field of Screams. And it's really just showing the difference between the evolution of haunting from four haunters' perspective. And the thing that I love about it is, again, it's not what you expect, but when you start to hear about the people that are interested in becoming haunters, and you find out that there are a lot of times people that maybe feel a little bit different from other people, right? They're trying to find their community. And so this particular community is so welcoming, and it's a great community for these people when they find it. And I think that, you know, that's one of the things that people have really been telling us, is they're surprised by just the stories, especially of the young girls that are in it, and that it's, you know, they're talking about their haunt, the Wraith House. And so, yeah, it definitely is different. And it's going to be in a film festival I'm going to tomorrow, which is called October Film Festival, taking place in Brooklyn. And then it actually shows on Wednesday, though, at 5:00. And then it's going to be at Sholo, the Sholo Film Festival, which takes place October 14th to the 16th, and that's in Pine Top, Arizona. So, and it just won an audience award, like Priscilla said, at the Silicon Beach Film Festival, which screened at the TCL Chinese Theaters, which is a phenomenal place to see a film. I mean, you're seeing it in the heart of Hollywood, and it's on an amazing screen, and, you know, there was a ton of people in the audience, and everyone just really enjoyed it. So that's kind of how we got into it, a little bit about the episode. And I forgot, what was the other question?
No, that's good. You're doing good. I just wanted to say I loved Halloween Obsessed for so many reasons, but what I loved most was all of the information about how Halloween began, the history and the reason of why it got started. And I thought, I never thought to look it up before, but since it's presented to me, I find it utterly fascinating, because when you think about why Halloween started, you're like, wow, I cannot believe that. That is so interesting. Can you just tell us briefly about how and why Halloween started, which is in this Halloween Obsessed Haunted Attractions version?
Yes, absolutely. And it's so funny that you mentioned that. Thank you for bringing it up, because there is an element, obviously, of teaching about these different parts in every episode. So in The Misconception of Witches, you know, you learn so much about that community, right? Which is, people don't really realize. But in the haunted attractions, one of the people that we have in it is Lisa Morton, who is an author, and she is an expert on Halloween. She's been writing books about it, encyclopedias for years, and she's also a yard haunter. So she added a really nice element to it in teaching about how haunts even started happening, or why people decorate for Halloween, right? And it was a really interesting thing when Ray and I, Ray Davis is one of our producers, and she was one of the people that helped me with the script on this. We were doing a lot of research on it and found that, and I, this is my favorite story. What happened was, in the Depression era, Halloween was becoming more of a vandal holiday, right? Like, kids would come out and they'd start, you know, causing more and more damage in every town. And in 1933, papers actually dubbed Halloween Black Halloween because there was so much vandalism going on. And so parents were trying to figure out how they could stop these teenage boys from being, you know, such a problem. And they came up with this idea of having these little house-to-house parties. And so, like, at one house, they might give them a little costume. At another house, they might give them a little treat. At another house, they might have them go through a little maze and scare them. And that is literally what started this tradition of having these Halloween get-togethers and little scarer moments, whether it's in a yard or in a house or in a basement, which goes into home haunting. So it really, really, it was a fascinating part of the discovery, but there were so many things, like even the fact that how much Halloween gets its roots out of France, which most people would have no idea about.
Yeah, that was one of the fascinating things. I'm like, France? What? I had no idea. What? How did France? So it, I mean, the stuff that is packed in to that documentary, oh, you just have to watch it. If you love Halloween, even if you don't love Halloween, I think if you watch this, you will become a Halloween obsessed lover. But I just loved how somebody decided to put a little pamphlet together and say, well, this is how you're supposed to celebrate Halloween. And it was sort of like a guideline for parents, because I would imagine back then, come on, 1933, we were in the height of the Depression. I mean, if anything, what I first thought of was, this is a way for, and I hate to even think about it now, but this was a great way for kids to actually get something to eat. Because, you know, back then, yeah, kids were going for, I mean, parents and children were going for days without any food. And this was a great way for them to get something to eat, which it broke my heart even thinking about that. But people don't think about that. That was one of the reasons. And somebody else told me, it wasn't in your, but when I brought it up at a party, they said, oh yeah, you know, one of the reasons was, so your documentary became the topic of discussion about the Depression era. So I would highly recommend.
Oh, that's funny.
Yeah, it really is. It's a great topic, for example, for people who are single and you're going to some parties, you want to talk about Halloween obsessed haunted attractions, because I bet you anything, if you watch this, there are so many things that you're not going to know about when you go to the party. You'll have so many things that are interesting to talk about. You might get a new girl, you might get a boyfriend, you might get a girlfriend, and people will go, wow, you're so interesting, I want to know everything else you know. But yeah, so many things packed into that particular documentary. Yeah. So for those in our audience who don't know this, because not everyone who listens works in the entertainment industry, or they know the differences in general. So just briefly, how do you shoot a documentary that's different than shooting, say, you know, a web series, a short film, a feature-length film? What would you point out are maybe three major differences or things you should be thinking about if you want to shoot a documentary?
Absolutely, absolutely. So these are the things that we notice that we really like out of it. First of all, because we're actually doing the filming, the cinematography, and we're doing the sound, and we're doing the lighting, We feel like we have become much better all around filmmakers. And that's just my husband and I for the most part. Now, we have some other producing partners that help us in some other ways. Like in our Misconception of Witches, one of our main producers arranged two of the interviews, and she arranged the cinematographer to shoot that. It was in a different part of the country. And then we have another producer who lives in Long Beach with us, Christy Maga. She's done other things with me. She's also an amazing still photographer. And so she's been helping us do cinematography if we have extra cameras and stuff here. But literally the whole process of you being involved in all of those aspects literally makes you an all-around better filmmaker. And you have less people on set, so you're doing more jobs, which we've kind of always done. The other thing about doing a documentary is you don't have as big a crew and you don't have a cast. When you're doing a documentary, you're interviewing people that are out there that are experts in your topic or the topics about for whatever reason. And so you don't have to deal with unions like SAG or any of these other areas. So there's a lot less restriction, right? And that's been really, really nice because you don't have to go through managers and agents and all that. You basically have to contact whoever you're going to interview and then just set up the interview. So that, you know, the reduced amount of footprint that you have as opposed to a big film is much, much smaller. And then on that topic of being smaller, obviously there's a lot less cost. So, you know, when you're producing a documentary, you're putting a lot less money into it. And so the chances of returns are a lot greater. And we're already seeing that just having one episode out. Like, we are already are seeing returns unlike what we've seen with our narrative. So those are probably the three biggest things I'd say is becoming number one, an all-around filmmaker. Number two, having a much smaller footprint and not having to deal with as many people or unions and all of that. And number three, having a better chance of, you know, recouping money, actually having revenue because the cost is so low.
So yeah, one thing I want to make sure if anyone's listening, they're like, oh my God, Linda just told me how to do a documentary. I'm going right out and do it. I want to point out that it's very important that you also think about incorporating. This is so mandatory. You must have release forms because I have.
Oh, absolutely.
Oh, you know what? I just thought about that. I thought, oh, we got it. Talk about that, because I just ran into a friend of mine who was shooting a documentary, and the next thing you know, the person, and she didn't do the release form. She was young. She didn't even, I don't know how she didn't know, but she didn't know, and she shot the whole documentary, and then I guess these people got together and decided they did not want to have their story told, and they tried to sue her, and I said, oh my gosh.
Right.
So tell us how important this is and how does one go about doing that?
Okay, so I only just, again, I briefly just covered three things that we enjoy about the documentary process, but absolutely you need to cover your bases like any other production that you're working on. You need release forms from everybody, and it's most ideal if you're as upfront in the beginning and tell people what your concept is, what your goal is with the documentary, so they're not surprised, and then get them to sign the form. You know, having someone try and sign a form afterwards is just, you're asking for problems, mm-hmm. and you just absolutely want to have that up front. I think you also just really need to be prepared, right? Like, you can't script out what they're going to say because it's a documentary. It's all based on interviews, but having great questions, right? So that they can expand on them and asking more questions than what you think you might need, because you might get to a point in a roundabout way, right? And also, sometimes when they're talking, even if you don't have a question about something that comes up, continue to ask them stuff, especially if there's an interest in it, right? Because you never know when you might need or that information, or it might lead to a much more interesting part of the documentary. The one thing about making a documentary film is you really find the story through the process of interviewing. So it's not like you have a script. It's not like it's not as laid out and planned out as any film. It's, you know, you're interviewing sometimes many people, and you might not have all of those people in that particular documentary. You're just trying to get information. But you want to get the information. The other major thing you want to get in any documentary, and you'll know this as soon as I say it, Priscilla, is B-roll. You have to get shots of stuff other than people talking, because no one wants to sit there and look at a talking head for like 20 minutes, 40 minutes, an hour and a half, whatever it is. Mm. You have to have interesting things that you cut away to. And so in like our haunted attractions episode, we actually got a lot of footage from other professional haunts in the industry where we sent them release. We told them, you know, we would use their haunts and credit them in the documentary if they could, if they wanted to let us use some of their footage. So we got some great footage, and that's why it's so visually stunning, because you see haunts around the United States, right? And just this incredible, incredible footage outside of our interviewees. And I think that most people doing documentaries, they, you know, do the interviews, but they don't understand how important it is to have that B-roll.
Right. And I loved how the one lady actually taught us briefly how to put a haunted attraction together. I think she had such a limited space, just hundreds of feet, not that much. And mm-hmm. she constructed, she showed us how you could construct a haunted house right in your backyard if you wanted to. So I thought that was interesting, mm-hmm. interesting to do a DIY factor in the documentary. I think that's very important, because I want to know how to put it.
Absolutely.
Yeah, so I think you covered just about every element you could think of for that particular topic. And that's why it is mesmerizing, and you can't stop for a second to blink. You're like, no, I don't want to miss anything. But it's just so well done by everyone. So I think you just did a fantastic job. Now, it's also screens, as you said, at the October Film Festival in Brooklyn. And it's a nominee. I think you said nominee for Best Documentary. So
yeah,
obviously you're going. Now, I want you to do some tell us why, Linda, it's so important as a person involved with the production, why it's important if they're mentally, physically, and financially able for the filmmaker and at least a couple members of the cast and crew to attend the film festivals, or just overall film festivals in general that they might be invited to, how important it is not only for the production, but for them as well, because there's so many networking opportunities and marketing opportunities and just overall, if you can. Now, not everybody can financially afford to go flying all over to where their films are being screened, or they might not be physically able to do it, but you should try, because I know a lot of people, once they're done with the production, they've moved on to another, they don't want to, you know, even be bothered. And I think, God, you know, if I was able to go, I would, if I could physically, if I could financially, if I could, but you know, not everyone feels that way. Tell us why this is so important.
So the biggest thing about film festivals is it's a marketing opportunity for you and your film. So the first thing, obviously, is if you were able to get into some of the top tier film festivals like the Sundances and Tellurides and, you know, Tribeca's and stuff can, that those festivals can make a filmmaker's career. Now, it's like getting in a lottery to go to those. So it's harder, but if you don't, I always say, if you don't buy the ticket, you're not going to win, right? You have to at least enter and give yourself that chance. Now, the other reason to go to some smaller festivals is because you're building your career, right? If you haven't won any awards yet, this is a chance for you to go to a medium tier or a smaller tier festival, that there might be more award opportunities, and you may become an award-winning filmmaker. And then on your resume, or anytime you're looking for a job, you can put that, and it just means something to other people when they hear that. The other thing too is, when your film's winning awards, you can use that in PR when you're selling it, and distributors want to know. I mean, if they know that the film's won awards, they're more likely to want your film, right?
Right.
And so it was interesting, because on Turnover, which is a film that you were involved with several years back, we won, I think, 9 major film festival awards. Now, I don't mean major like Sundance. I mean, we won like the grand prize, best film, best family film, audience, you know, the audience award, at least 9 different film festivals.
Mm-hmm.
So it got nominated for a lot of other things like acting and directing and all that other stuff. But it was funny, Paul Guilfoyle, who actually starred in it. Many people probably know him.
CSI Las Vegas! CSI!
Exactly. He said to me, he said, Linda, it's so much more important to win grand prize best of fest film awards than for other people to win like best actor or best cinematography, because if it's winning the best of the fest, that's what distributors care about, because it means there's a bigger audience. So it's all about marketing. And whenever you can go and you can talk about it. So for us, like, we're not going to a huge amount of festivals. We're taking on each one of these docuseries when they come out, we're putting them in maybe 2 to 3 festivals. We're trying to get them in at least 2 to 3 different festivals right before we put it out on Amazon or Tubi or wherever, so that it gets a little bit of buzz, right? We have things that reviewers can refer to, you know, and all this goes into your electronic press kit, your EPK. So, you know, these are things that, it's all about the marketing, but it's also all about helping you as a filmmaker become, giving you something to talk about and giving something for people. It's like when people win an Emmy, right? People are all impressed because someone won an Emmy. They're also impressed when you've won lots of awards. So it's important. I just, real quick about traveling to them, I think that how people should consider traveling to festivals is enter festivals in areas you want to travel to, right? Because you're going to want to go there. If you want to go to Greece, then enter a film festival in Greece, right?
Turn it into a vacation.
Exactly. It's a vacation, plus you're meeting community there. You're going to be welcomed in a different way, as opposed to just going and vacationing. And it's just a whole different experience. So try and make it somewhere that you would want to go. And if anything, if you can't afford to do that, then enter film festivals in your local hometown, where you can, you know, meet people, because every festival has a lot of opportunity where they bring in guest speakers, guest lecturers, and you can meet people within the industry. Also, if you're going to a festival that, like Idlewild, something that's a little out of town, like Sholo, a lot of the filmmakers that are there are in a place and they can't leave. Like in LA, people will go to the festival, but they'll leave and go home, right?
Right.
In those other film festivals, the people aren't going to fly to a destination and leave and come back, right? They're going to be there, and you're going to have a chance to actually build relationships with other filmmakers. And then those people, you may go on to to work with on other films. They may love seeing you in your particular film, or love your directing style, or love your filming style, and want you to shoot their film, or want you to direct their film. So, you know, you're meeting future employers, you know, in a sense.
Yeah, you got to think of it like that. You can't be so limited in your thinking, oh my God, I got to pay to go there, and then I got to do this. If you think like that, that's not productive in enthusiastic thinking. If you're thinking about adding to your tool set or your skill set, then you got to think about it in a different way. You're building your toolbox of skills. Now, you mentioned Sholo Film Festival. Now, I'm so excited. I love this woman that you turned me on to. You introduced me to her because you know I love Christmas as well as Halloween.
Yes.
And you introduced me to Martina Beat Webster. I believe she is the lady who started or the creator of the Sholo Film Festival. And
Yes,
so tell me about the Sholo Film Festival. Tell me everything about it.
So Martina started out, she used to live in Hemet. She was part of Idlewild, and she did several different things for them on a volunteer basis. And then when they decided to move to Sholo, Pine Top, Arizona, I think it's Pine Top Lakeside, she wanted to start her own film festival. She had experience creating events, which is fantastic. She's a great promoter. She's a film producer in her own right. She was one of our producers on Turnover. And so she started this film festival. I think this is their fourth year. I hope I'm getting that right, but it's a wonderful film festival. They treat the filmmakers that go there like no other film festival. They give them all of these things, all these swag bags. They have an amazing award show. They show the films in two or three different blocks, so they have a chance to be seen at different times. They do Q&As with all the filmmakers after the film, and they just really, really, they put a lot of stuff in. They bring people into, like, distributors or, you know, key people that can teach certain workshop classes to the filmmakers that are there. So there's a lot going on, and we've just really, we love the Sholo Film Festival. Plus, it's in a really nice, you know, destination setting in the mountains in Arizona. It's not, you know, in the heart of the heat, you know, of Arizona. You're actually up in the mountains, which is kind of nice.
And that's a great time to have it. Yeah, the great time to have it, because it's not so hot in October. So, yeah. Woo! Well, yeah. I'm excited because I think she's probably, I mean, most likely she's also going to be screening #Blast, which I am involved on. I loved. Oh, thank you so much, Linda, for referring her to me. I have had such fun meeting this lady and just having interactions with her back and forth. And you, as you said, she is a phenomenal promoter. You two are like,
yes, she is.
Wait a minute. What are they? Oh, it was a show in the 70s, Penny Marshall and Cindy Williams. What was that show called? But anyway, you two remind me.
Laverne and Shirley.
Yes.
Laverne and Shirley.
Because the two of you are equal in promoting your projects, which is so wonderful to see. Because as I've spoken to you before about this, one of my pet peeves is people who take all the time and energy to create a project, and then once it's gone, they get their credit on IMDb, they move on to something else, and they just don't do anything to continue to monetize or to promote it. And boy, that just isn't right, because these people usually will work for either nothing or very low.
Right.
And then they do nothing, just drop it and move on. Big pet peeve.
Yeah.
But boy, this lady, Martina Beat Webster, and her daughter and her whole team working on #Blast, they're just like you. They promote it to a zenith point. So I imagine she's going to have it screen also. And gosh, I can't. Oh, I'm so upset. I can't go. I would have loved to have gone. But I am excited about that because it's coming out in theaters. She's got it everywhere. It's coming out everywhere. It's coming out in local theaters.
Yes.
Right? You know more than I do about it. What's going on with it?
Yeah. No, she is. She did that film, which is a script written by her daughter, who's Dalia, who is also part of the film festival. She does the marketing stuff. And Dalia is her, you know, she also is a great marketer. She's obviously younger, a millennial, maybe even a Gen Z-er.
I think Gen Z,
She's just literally so attuned to marketing. They're just, the family is just an amazing marketing family. But again, that just goes to show, like, that's, they understand how to have a film make money. And that's how you have to do it. You can't just create a project and just hope someone else is going to do something. All distributors, when they pick up your film, they still expect you to market the film so it will make money. No distributor expects to take on your film and then not have the filmmaker do something. And so if that's sort of your plan, that you're going to make a film and you think someone else is going to market it and get it out there, then you have a rude awakening, because that's not the way it works.
Yeah, just like the actors.
A very rude awakening.
Yeah, just like the actors, who some actors think, oh, I got to get an agent. I got to get an agent. Well, you know what? You are your own damn agent. Get out there and pound the payments. I mean, they're not going to take you on if you're not doing anything, but that's a whole different topic. So we got 3 minutes. Yeah. I want to find out what are you still, real quick, do you still have the wonderful Bat Chat podcast? Because I want people to go to your website. I don't know if you're doing it anymore, but just go to her website for these particular reasons. That she had started a Bat Chat podcast, which I was so excited to be on with her friend Ray. And what this entails is it's Bat Chatter topic. So they cover things like guest interviews, they have paranormal and psychic, and they have the scream queens and haunts and events and movie and people and costumes, which I love, and Halloween decor, which I live for. Halloween food. I sent you a link for some TikToks because I am blown away by the various things that people come up with the food.
Right.
But anyway,
right.
The traditions and history of Halloween. So you were doing a podcast called Bat Chat Podcast. Are you still doing that? Or?
Yes, we are. We are doing it. And they're coming out about once a month right now because we've been so busy with the docuseries. Yeah. But basically, we focus on all things Halloween and movies because we're both producers. So that really drives a lot of our guests. We had you on, obviously. You're a producer and you're in really the PR field. You know, if you think about it, you're out there marketing this whole industry and people in this industry. So, like, and then there's just our mutual love of Halloween. So there's that. But you mentioned something, because it is a super popular topic, which is like the psychics and mediums and all that. That's our next episode for the docuseries. Our episode is called Living with the Paranormal, and it's three mediums and psychics, actually four. It's four that are talking about how they can't turn off their connection to the paranormal. It's always there, and it's about how they live with it. And it's a fascinating episode.
Oh, so that, if they go on your website now, is that something you're going to be shooting, or it's already up there now?
No, we've already shot it. We're editing it now. And that one we're hoping will be out early next year. And it'll probably be in festivals like January, February, hopefully, and then out in the public in March. But that's the next episode.
Well, you know what? Talk to me privately about getting Robert Englund to do maybe an interview. I don't know if he'll do it, but he's a mutual. mutual friend of a friend. So that wouldn't that be great to have him come on? Oh my gosh.
All right, girl.
Well, you know what? In our time, can as always, we start talking. Next thing you know, I feel like Carol Burnett where I got to ring my earlobe because it's time to say goodbye. But for everyone, please go to Linda's website. It is runawayproductions.tv. But I guess if you put .com in, I don't know, maybe it'll navigate you. But Linda Palmer, runawayproductions.tv. And please go to her website just to see the podcast for the Bat Chat. Ah! And then, of course, the Halloween Obsessed. But it is on Tubi TV, Netflix, you said, or Prime Video? Where is it?
No, it's on Amazon. And Tubi TV.
Tubi TV. Go now. It's perfect. Perfect to watch every single day of the week until Halloween and maybe even into Christmas. Right, Len?
Yes. And we're really looking at putting out an episode every 3 months. So about every 3 months, there should be a new episode. If you go to our website and go to the Halloween Obsessed tab, then you'll see the various ones that are coming out in the future.
Well, there you go. Linda Palmer, thank you so much for being on the show. Say goodbye to your fans.
Bye, everybody, and thank you, Priscilla. You are so amazing, and I really appreciate you having me on. You're too kind, and it's always, always so much fun.
Oh, my God. Well, you know, if I can make it to your Halloween party, I will be living my best life. So hopefully we'll make it. Thank you, everybody, for listening to the Queen of Halloween, Linda Palmer. We'll see you next week on Question Reality. Bye.
Bye.
You're listening to Question Reality with Priscilla Leona. Right here on LA Talk Radio.